Welcome to the Lifetime Body Podcast, where we discuss how to kick ass for life through the pursuit of ultimate wellness, peak performance, and maximum longevity. Kicking ass for life is not just about achieving health or fitness or long lifespans alone. It's about totally kicking ass at everything you do in life. In every episode, join me, author and human performance expert John Zombro, and my amazing co-hosts and guests. We'll dive into the science of exercise physiology, biomechanics, nutrition, physical therapy, lifestyle, and more to meld the concepts of optimal living and advanced training. You'll explore how to look, feel, and perform your best as you live your healthiest, happiest, most successful, and longest life. Let's kick ass for life. This is episode number 39 of the Lifetime Body Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and I'm here, as almost always, with my amazing co-host, PK. Good day, PK.
John Boy, good morning.
Yeah, so last time we left it off, like, you know, PK, does it stand for powerful king or pleasantly kind? And I think, no, it's perfectly ketogenic.
Well, we know that it doesn't stand for that. Nobody's perfect, and no, far from that. But you know, maybe something in that area.
So I get to say something different than usual. I started off this morning a bit surly.
Really? Okay, lay it on me.
Yeah, it's kind of rare for me, and everyone's used to hearing me say how, you know, happy and la-la and excited I am about doing the podcast. But, you know, I got up this morning, and I was about a full sleep cycle short of usual and short of optimal, and I was feeling it.
Okay. And what happened from there?
I have to accept full responsibility. I was binge reading last night, and I got carried away. I try to read fiction at night. You know, it's very entertaining and calming for the mind. But I was on my Kindle, a newer Kindle that has kind of the, you know, screen filter built into it. And I had the dimly lit room, but I was so engaged with this kind of mystery novel that I was reading that I stayed up too late. And I felt it when I got up, believe it or not.
So you're saying you're binge reading fiction. You just got into the narrative then.
Oh yeah. I mean, one of the writers that I enjoy, this is CJ Box. He's kind of a local author over in Sheridan, Wyoming. And he writes these murder mystery novels about game warden Joe Pickett. And I love, he's such a wonderful storyteller. I love following along with him. And he carried me a little too far into the night.
John Boy, you know what? You still have a pep in the step of your voice. And you know, I don't think I would have, or the listeners would have even noticed, had you not confessed.
Well, there were some other things that happened. I woke up, it was like Groundhog Day, man, because I woke up to another sub-zero morning, and I don't know how many we've had, and snow coming down hard, and I thought, but then I said, look, you know, it's winter in Montana, you know, get over yourself, and so that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's also... it is also snowing here, and it's sub-zero, and I think that it's nice and cozy inside, but I hear you looking out. We're getting a dose of this.
Yeah, and so I'm feeling now slowly, you know, like my elk steak and eggs and coffee are kicking in, and I'm almost ready to start talking about kicking A, what's happening for me is I'm coming alive like Frampton.
Nice. Okay, we'll take it.
You know, it's kind of like baby, I'm amazed. Oh, no, let me change it. PK, I'm amazed at the way you show up for the show.
Oh, John Boy, I haven't been sang to in damn near two decades, if ever. So I am blushing because you make me feel weird, but I love it. It's great. The listeners love it. It's all for the listeners.
So here's what's going to happen. You know, as I'm coming alive and you're, you know, flushing and blushing and having all that wonderful blood flow, probably didn't take any niacin or anything. You know, we are going to talk about today's topic eventually, but you know what? Your best finishes always follow. This is a question for you. Just guess.
Okay. Your best finishes. Your worst defeats? I don't know.
Well, along that line, your slowest start. So I think I'm really going to rev up today because I had a slow start, but I can feel that a change in.
I like it. I'm in.
So first of all, we are talking today, episode number 39. Hey, thanks guys for joining us. You are awesome. Dealing with injuries, part two. We're going to get into chronic injuries today. And I thought before we mention that, if there's any local listeners, we love you if we have some local audience. Be careful out there because the statistics are fairly strong that shoveling deep snow is strongly correlated with heart attacks and back injuries.
You know what? That's not hard for me to connect the dots on that. You know, it's heavy. It's an unusual activity. There's lifting, there's bending. I could see that happening.
Indeed. So just a word of advice to everyone, but let's dive in now. Finally, the topic of dealing with injuries and chronic injuries. And so at first I think, what do you think we should start with, PK?
Well, you know what? So we talked about acute last week, and if you haven't caught up with that conversation, go back and check it out. You don't have to do it before, you know, carrying on today, but there's some good, obviously, pearls in there, and it kind of sets the table. So I think that maybe, John, where I'd love to start is, like, what's the definition of a chronic injury sort of in contrast to an acute injury?
Yes. A chronic injury is one that won't go away. It won't get completely better, for lack of better terms.
Got it. And I think that everyone knows, I mean, what a chronic injury is, just that something that, you know, I'm with you that it won't go away. But when you dive a little deeper for the layman out there and you're kind of explaining what's happening physiologically in the body that this sort of this injury is sticking around, what's going on?
We can roll through that fairly easily. Okay. The suffix itis, osis, or apathy, and even some others, will be applied to most chronic injuries. And so if we're focusing today on muscles, tendons, ligaments, fascia, joint capsules, I'll probably save arthritis or intra-articular pathologies for another time. We're talking about these things like tendonitis or fasciosis or tendinopathy. And so these are the diagnostic terms that we sometimes are given or hear. And really what that means is that we have an injury that is stuck in the scab phase of healing. So last time, and thanks for alluding to that, we talked about the three phases that an injury goes through. There's bleeding, there's scabbing, and there's scarring. Well, a lot of times these injuries stay chronic because for some reasons, for numbers of reasons, they're stuck in the scab phase. Maybe they dance over into some bleeding as well, but they just can't progress through the scar and remodeling to complete the process and become a memory.
John, that's so fascinating. I have to share a quick story. I was talking with some friends last night. They came over for a workout in my garage and you know, I had injured my back about a month ago, and we were talking about, you know, speedy recovery from that. And I was sharing sort of how kind of I quickly moved through the stages. And one of my buddies was like, wait a minute, you actually had a cut on your back? And I was like, oh, sorry, that's my bad. No, that's what it represents on the inside, is that, you know, there's a laceration or the equivalent, and it needs to move through these three stages. So I do think that it's pretty fascinating that we talk about these chronic injuries. Just from a layman, man on the street, it is that injury that you can't see, but it is stuck in the scab or scar. It's just, you know, like a cut on the exterior of your skin, it hasn't been allowed to heal all the way into the, you know, the scar phase and actually get all the way back. So that's fascinating for me. It's helpful for me to sort of have that illustration of what's going on behind the scenes. It brings it to life for me.
Well, thank you for elucidating that, because I think that is a very valuable framework. It's a simple analogy that we all know, and it really helps us to understand these injury mechanisms. And really, I think with chronic injury, just kind of summing up that definition, it's a frustrating situation to be in, but oftentimes it represents a great problem-solving opportunity, because it's very rewarding when we, you know, piece together the things that are necessary to put those injuries behind us, shall we say, in the rearview mirror.
Oh, and no more so than the person experiencing the chronic injury. So let's talk about some examples of, you know, of some things we're going to chat about today. What would fall into this category?
The first thing I'd like to mention is an acute injury. We talked about those last week, but an acute injury that is not managed well. Mm-hmm. For example, if a person is sleeping quite poorly, maybe worse than I was doing today, their nutrition is inadequate. They're not going about their rehabilitation or training endeavors appropriately. That can sometimes block or hold the injury, you know, in this chronic phase and not allow it to complete its recovery.
God, I can see that happening. Yeah, it just, that's got to be super common, right?
Yeah, and one of the classic examples of that is any athlete who's highly motivated, mm-hmm. has an acute injury, and then decides to try to come back a little too soon. You know, again, this is an error of motivation for the most part, a little minor judgment error, but we've all probably done this. Like, it doesn't feel that bad. It feels pretty good. I think I'll, oops, you know, and there you
Yeah, I think that, you know, maybe even like not even just the athletes, but if you want to do an activity that's fun, you know, you hurt yourself mountain biking and then, you know, you want to get right back at it. You're not a high performance athlete, but that's something I can definitely identify with. So what are some other sort of examples of chronic injuries, John?
Well, I think the real focus today and the thing that's in most of our minds is what is often called an overuse injury. And I like to really describe that as an overload problem.
Interesting. Why do you make the distinction there?
Well, you know, our bodies are made to be used. It's actually fairly hard to overuse a human body. It's a durable beast. But if things aren't right, we can overload a certain tissue. And so, you know, that's kind of the, as opposed to say something snapping or ripping like an acute injury, this is more like that proverbial, you know, final straw on the camel's back. Something's not quite right, and we keep doing enough of it until we start to cause damage, irritation, breakdown in the tissues.
Interesting. So in some ways, it's the how durable of beasts that we are allows us to get far enough to have this overload problem really arise.
Yeah, it may be even endemic to our nature. Hmm. So not necessarily a character flaw for anyone who has.
Never a character flaw. Never a character flaw. So what are some common areas and in the muscle and tendon area that maybe people would recognize would fit into this category?
Sure. A lot of these things happen in our lower extremities or upper extremities, and people will recognize terms like plantar fasciitis, Achilles tendinosis, bicipital tendinopathy in the shoulder. You know, that list gets very long, but all of those are the kind of things we're talking about today.
Got it. All right.
Hey, folks. Thanks so much for listening today. This show and every episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Lifetime Body. At TLB, we offer a life-changing collection of services that include one-on-one health consultations, performance coaching and training packages, and inspiring workshops revolving around the five life-optimizing components of food, movement, sleep, ergonomics, and awareness. Whether you're looking to tune up your health or body composition, train more effectively and get results in athletics, or bring wellness and productivity-enhancing workshops to your group or business, we've got you covered. Check out thelifetimebody.com, click on the services menu item, and start kicking ass for life today. Now back to the show. So then we move into we now know that a chronic or overuse injury is an overload problem. And what I like to say is, well, what is the root cause or causes of this chronic injury? And it's actually something that we call movement dysfunction.
Movement dysfunction. Okay. Is this a Jay-Z? Is this a TLB term, or is this kind of out there in the overall wellness and physical therapy world?
Yeah, I think it's the out there term. Okay. I don't think there are too many things I'll be talking about today that were contrived by me, but you know, I'll try to clarify if that is the case. So really, movement dysfunction, you know, we all know what that means, what it sounds like. It's suboptimal or abnormal movement patterns that are altering forces or loads as they go through our bodies.
Okay. Yep. I'm tracking.
So just like any machine, you know, you think about, you know, industrial machinery, you know, in say like a factory or an automobile or vehicle. If the the pattern of movement is something's not right. Something's wonky, out of whack, asynchronous. Suddenly the wear and tear is accelerated and it can ultimately lead to damage or breakdown.
Yes. Okay. So I guess what are the different, if we put this on a spectrum, this movement dysfunction on the lower end all the way up into the more intense side, how would you describe that for the audience?
Sure. Well, let's say that the factors aren't too many. The forces aren't too great. In some cases, maybe a person is moving in such a way, and we'll probably use some runner examples because they're easy to picture, the gait pattern or the running form is, something's not quite right. You can tell when you're looking, it's a bit asynchronous, but let's say it's just mild. That tends to be this thing that aggravates when a person runs, and then it calms down when they rest a little bit and they get into that cycle of chronicity. But when taken too far, in other words, okay, now suddenly we've got more factors that are not ideal and more forces and more volume. And also the symptoms are there, but the person is so motivated that they're trying to, ignore or overregulate those body's messages. Then what happens ultimately is rupture, tearing. You can tear a tendon because it's kind of like a rope fraying. If you eventually wear through it, it snaps.
Okay. Wow. That's vivid. Yeah, absolutely. So, what are some other considerations on this movement dysfunction side?
Well, you ask yourself, movement dysfunction, it's really looking at, what are sometimes called compensatory or substitution, patterns or problems. Mm-hmm. So whenever we have something that is uncomfortable, sore, or stiff or weak, and you name it, our bodies are ingrained to come up with, a secondary movement plan or motor program, if you like that term. And so that's an example of that is limping. When we have an injury, an ankle sprain, for example, we'll limp immediately because that is one way to offload forces to that injured area. But the problem is with these human bodies is sometimes we'll develop that alternative pattern of movement and then we'll adopt it permanently. We won't unlearn it and relearn the original, more preferred or desired program.
Interesting. And I have to presume also if the chronic injury isn't ever dealt with, the stimulus, the original stimulus that led to this, compensatory situation can continue for a long time, years.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you're getting into what are the underlying issues with movement dysfunction. And it's really that we have improper force management. So our human bodies, they're like machines. They're designed to manage the forces of life, lifting, pushing, pulling, carrying, jumping, landing, running, all those things. And if we're not managing those forces ideally, then again, that's represented as a dysfunction. And there are two types of deficits which lead to the movement dysfunction. There are mobility deficits and stability deficits.
All right, let's dive a little deeper into those because I think that, as far as it's just a proxy for the, every man and woman on the street, I'm following the logic here. You're getting a little deeper. Now I'm like, okay, talk to me about the mobility deficits, about how those contribute to these chronic injuries.
Sure. So, we recognize that in all mechanical systems and in these human bodies, mobility and stability exist on a continuum. Really mobile is really loose and really stable is really stiff. Well, ideally somewhere in the middle or near the mean or under that bell-shaped curve is where we want to exist. And that's going to vary person to person and body part to body part. But nonetheless, if we have a mobility deficit, it means we may have stiffness. We may have joint restriction, the various reasons for that. Or we may have a coordination problem or just a motor programming issue where, the body, as opposed to being stiff or restricted and blocked from movement, it would be capable of movement, but we just can't quite teach our bodies to move in the appropriate pattern. And so we're using something that's suboptimal.
Interesting. Okay, so let's take this. What's an example of that where a mobility deficit would contribute to a chronic injury?
I would say, you know, if we want to look at society, you know, we sit a lot in society. We probably shouldn't sit as much, but sitting tends to shorten several key muscles, and that's going to come up in our example. But sitting shortens the hip flexors. It shortens the hamstring muscles. It can have other postural effects as well. But prolonged sitting will keep these muscles and musculotendinous units in a shortened position for long enough that they undergo some collagen fiber change known as adaptive shortening. Again, none of these are terms I'm inventing today. That adaptive shortening means that the muscle actually starts to think, if you will, that, oh, this is the length I need to be, so I'm going to sort of reset my structure here to have a normal resting length that's actually shorter than it needs to be. And so problems can happen when we try to move with a muscle that won't elongate properly through range of motion.
Wow. Well, the good news is that in our modern, you know, North American society, we don't sit that much. All right, let's moving on. Stability deficits. What's that?
Just finished up my coffee. So stability deficit is kind of like the opposite. You know, the limb, the lever, the joint, whatever. It's not stable. And so that's oftentimes because we have like genetic laxity or hypermobility. So in other words, a person's just a little too flexible in their connective tissues, you know, that can happen, or injury can cause that to occur. Another thing that can decrease stability is a lack of supportive or stabilizing muscular contraction. So the muscle Sure. could be weak or just could not be firing properly where we need it to kind of, hold the system together. And so those are stability deficits. And I guess you want me to provide an example there. And so let's say we have a person who has those slightly hypermobile joints, and that's true in their lower extremities. Let's say, the ankle, knee, and hip. So every time they strike the ground, there's an extra bit of wobble and wander in their limb. And of course, now the central nervous system says, hey, this isn't desirable. We're trying to go straight ahead, and we've got vectors going in all directions. So let's fire up some muscle contractions, almost excessively to try to help that. And so then we end up getting some muscular or tendinous overuse issues because now those things have to take on two jobs instead of one.
John, that is, wow. Okay. It's, I guess I'm just imagining the scope of that, where if you do have these deficits, there will it can be pretty common. So where do we go from here? You say, all right, now I can identify. I'm starting to like really understand, or at least just at least see maybe for the first time. What can I do? Where do you go from here?
Yes. I think that, we almost go back. We start with what we talked about in the Animal Fit program, which is the Lifetime Bodies, body type specific training program. But there's some principles in there where we learn about ourselves, and what kind of connective tissue mobility or muscle fiber characteristics do I have? And then you can start to figure out, well, what might be good activities, more challenging ones, so we want to have that knowledge, and we always want to relate to, well, okay, I have some old injuries. These might be chronic postures, poor movement habits. I just always want to keep everything in mind about like my body, so I know, what I need to work on so I can use it the way I want, and also, what it might just naturally be a little bit better at. So good to have that self-knowledge. But then ultimately we get to management. Okay, so you have an injury. Well, how do you manage it? Probably this is a great case when a person's frustrated and they've tried a few things and they haven't gotten success. It might be time to see a professional. And, there are a lot of professionals that are available. I'd certainly be an advocate for the physical therapy profession because this is kind of the basis of PT education. But there are also other folks out there, as long as they know how to analyze movement, prioritize and, prescribe or utilize the appropriate interventions, treatment, assess, evaluate, get results. That's really what it's all about. So, a professional as opposed to a specific one, a good place to start. So then what we want to do right away is analyze movement. And we don't really need to go back and look at statics or the medical diagnosis again, because in other words, you can have an x-ray finding and that's going to say something. A person can have a symptom, but ultimately we want to find out, well, what's causing those things. And so that's why we want to identify the major movement dysfunction or dysfunctions. And so an example, and I'll try to give an example of each of these 4 points we're going to go over, is a runner who has received a medical diagnosis from his physician, say it's a he, of bilateral recurrent proximal hamstring tendonitis.
That's
something that's scribbled on a sheet sometimes. Of course, these days, you know, we have EMR, electronic medical records, so some of these things are getting easier to read. But nonetheless, when we look at the movement dysfunction that this runner's displaying, many times it'll be common, and these are the things that, you know, that I've seen many, many times, and probably many others have as well. An anteriorly tilted pelvis with a big arch in the lower back, an overstriding gait pattern with a predominant heel strike of the foot out in front of the body, and then kind of a unique effort that looks like they're pulling their body back up to the foot in front of them, and that's known as being a backseat puller, pulling out of the backseat. So that's a gait or movement dysfunction pattern that's consistent with that hamstring tendonitis.
Interesting. Okay. So an anterior pelvic tilt, a back arch, overstriding heel strike, a back puller. So we're saying that this person's basically their back is arched, and it means that their foot is striking out in front of their body. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah, those things are all connected together. And so the back is arched. They're definitely overstriding. You see the heel strike out in front. There's not a lot of push off, from when the foot's on the ground. We call that the stance phase. You know, they're not utilizing the extension of their hip very much. And so that would be, you know, a movement dysfunction that, you know, someone who's an expert would be able to notice very quickly. Then we say, okay, well, now that we have the movement dysfunction, well, what are the deficits that are causing it? You know, you got to identify these things, right? So first of all, we would say, well, gosh, when we look at this guy, you know, standing, walking, running, you just do a quick, you know, try not to get into pain analysis. Well, he's got poor postural control. So, you know, that's going to need to be addressed. Probably, and there are manual muscle tests we can do. This has weak abdominal muscles, has tight or adaptively shortened or inflexible hip flexor muscles. These are our typical evaluation findings. He has atrophied, underdeveloped, poorly activated glute muscles or buttocks. On palpation, there will be tenderness and tension in the upper hamstring muscles and at that musculotendinous junction where they attach up at the pelvis. And also we notice, you know, a deficit actually that he's wearing, typical, thickly cushioned running shoes with a heel to 4 foot differential of about 15 millimeters. So all those things are known to cause this hamstring tendinopathy that we talked about.
Interesting. Okay. So got it. So we're feeling some tightness in the hamstring, but it's come out in these other ways. We've identified the deficits. What's the intervention then? How do you sort of treat these root causes then?
Yeah. So we kind of build on those deficits a little bit more. So all those things stacked together, those positions and, you know, one thing working too much, one thing not working enough, they cause this overload at the hamstrings where the pelvis is tilted up. The hamstrings are sort of pre-stretched before the leg even goes forward. And then, you know, they're firing too long and trying to help pull the body up. You know, all those things are inappropriate. And then they're so sore and inflamed that they're even, you know, just tense and contracted chronically. We call that a protective holding or guarding pattern. And it's the muscle's way of saying, I want to have stop doing this to me. You know, so this is a case where if a person said, and I've seen this a lot, they've got this problem and this set of issues, and they say, you know, I have been stretching my hamstrings just, you know, religiously, and it doesn't help. It doesn't work. It even makes them worse. I'm like, well, yeah, because the mechanism of injury is actually overstretching your hamstrings. So if we apply more of the mechanism of injury, you know, common sense says that's not going to help. And I'm not being condescending to someone else because they don't have, you know, my training, but that's really what they need to understand.
So, John, I want to stop you there because this is something that I can identify with that feeling. So this person, this dude, he's feeling tightness in his hamstrings or what, or soreness or, you know, he's perceiving this as tightness. So when we feel tightness, we really do sort of think, I got to stretch and loosen those up. But actually the tightness, the inflammation is indicative of, I guess that's a common thing that you would say, if something's tight, I want to stretch it out. But what you're saying actually is you need to take the tension off the hamstring, and stretching it just exacerbates or, you know, inflames those little lacerations inside.
Totally. And this is only one example. So there are cases where, you know what, you can stretch your way out of pain. You know, if movement restriction is the problem, then stretching is one of the solutions, of course. But, in this case, you know, the mechanism, which again is a common one, is a bit different. And it gets into, okay, now we're going to use my terms, you know, tight versus taut. Mm. And so a tight muscle, per my definition, is one that is actually adaptively shortened. It's undergone, you know, some changes, which we can see under microscopy, that those myofibrils have shortened. That's a stiff muscle. Stretching works for that. But a taut muscle is one that's actually just holding a mild contractile state because the CNS is doing it. The central nervous system is saying, we've got injury, we've got inflammation, we've got pain, and it happens when we stretch. So let's shorten and hold against that so we don't keep having that happen. So trying to stretch out the protective mechanism would be totally inappropriate in that case.
Got it. Okay. It's so interesting because very common. So all right, keep going. Thanks for the clarification there.
Oh yeah. So then we finally get, this is like the meat of it. You know, I think what you're looking for is like, well, what are the interventions, you know? And so I'm going to say that we want to treat these causes. We want to treat the root cause, you know, identify, solve, fix the problem. And so, first thing we want to do is we want to do some postural education and cueing. All sorts of clinical tools that one can do for that. But, you know, just teaching a person where their neutral position is, how their body and limbs align and work best, and kind of avoiding chronic end-range loading patterns. So we do that. I'd probably have them do some dynamic trunk stability training, you know, just to work on strength and endurance in multiple muscles, including his abdominals. And I wouldn't probably use, you know, the old, you know, sit-ups or crunches. I'd probably use more dynamic movements where we're working on engaging those muscles to stabilize and hold posture while the limbs are moving, that kind of thing. Hip flexor stretching. Sure, you know, we want to, you know, have some stretching, and, you know, obviously it takes a lot more to change a tissue property than it does to maintain it. So for a while I might have him, doing alternate kneeling at his desk as opposed to sitting for one thing, but also to stretch hip flexors many, many times throughout the day. Glute development, and, you know, a flat backside is not an asset.
Okay. Oh, John boy.
On fire. What can I say? It's happening. But, you know, we want that to look like somebody took a bowling ball, put it on a bandsaw, cut it in half, and, you know, that's what you need in your back pockets. So we want to do some glute development. So, you know, bridges, hip thrusts, extension, abduction movements, proper training with how to, step, lunge, squat, deadlift. I mean, those are advanced skills, and doing it crappy is not acceptable. So, we need to do that. Inhibition work on the hamstring. So this is an interesting one. You say, well, what do you mean by that? So, well, we want to desensitize or deactivate those hamstrings. So we might use a foam roller or one of the little therapy balls or different kind of things, and just teach the person how to, gently compress on those muscles. And the research definitely supports that sort of sends a signal to the stimulus to decrease that muscle tone and relax. So a nice trick there. So we're using it. We're not using that to really try to like aggressively break up scar tissue. That's not really what we're doing here. We want to get the muscle to actually start making some scar. You know, it's stuck in inflammation. So again, always got to be thinking about, well, what are our deficits? What are our goals? And then we get into the shoes. And this is a really interesting topic. It's been a big part of my career for a very long time. And I'll probably want to put this guy into minimalist shoes, or even if the weather's appropriate, have him do some of his running on grass or a beach if it was available, barefoot. And the reason being, then we can get back into natural function of the foot. When we do that, you know, whether it's minimal shoes or barefoot, it automatically brings the foot strike under the hip, moves it to the forefoot or midfoot, and keeps the knees slightly more flexed. So it's a really, you know, easy fix to get back to natural running patterns. And there's some variances on, you know, obviously each person's different, their body weight, their foot morphology, et cetera. But nonetheless, we can do that. We want to reduce his mileage and use more cross training. Or if he can't do that, he'll be fired because, you know, let's not waste each other's time. And then also the running that he does do for a while is going to be primarily gait training that's emphasizing drills and striders, learning how to improve the mechanics of running or get them back to where they probably were when he was a child before, you know, society stole that from him with the desk and other things. And that's really kind of how this would all come together. And so if we know those movement dysfunctions, know the deficits, those are the interventions.
Interesting. Okay. And it all starts with properly understanding what's going on internally with this chronic injury. All right. So then take me after the intervention. We've got our fella, he's working on this program. What, you know, what does life look like as it unfolds after these are put into play?
Yep. So we know what we're dealing with. We know what to do about it. Now we get into evaluation and assessment. So we tweak as we go along. You know, no program is static or fixed. That never works. It's got to be dynamic and adjusting to the things that are happening that we're learning about the individual. But we expect removal of the blockades to healing. The body's going to heal itself if we stop beating on this hamstring with all those inappropriate forces. So we've restored natural ideal function. In a case like this, I'm going to tell you it's going to take about 4 to 6 weeks. And that at that point, this you know, individual is going to be able to continue independently and cautiously with a return to sport or return to training. And hopefully we'll give him some pearls of great wisdom. And, you know, whatever. He's going to have a lot of pearls. And then we've done those things. So just to clarify, identify the dysfunction. Further delineate the deficits, do the interventions that are specific to those deficits, and then evaluate the program to make sure that we get a proper outcome. So those are the four things. And then we come back around to the topic of, well, is it okay to treat symptoms? Absolutely. It's fine to treat symptoms adjunctively, but we have to recognize that all we're going to get is symptom relief if we don't treat causes. So the real results come when we identify the mechanical problems and fix them.
Interesting. Okay. John, I think that, as I've sort of been sitting here listening to you walk through, you know, how to eventually, come up with an intervention program, I think that, I've harkened back to moments in my life where I just really was treating the symptom as opposed to, treating actually what the root cause was. So interesting. All right. Zoom out a little bit. Let's talk about just overall, you know, the bigger picture here. I know that there's some things that you wanted to finish up on that may contribute or may have a big impact on chronic injuries and just in connection with movement in general.
Yeah, I'm going to go off on a tangent before, or as to, in a way to get there. And okay. Actually, I think I'm just going to go off. So, you know, I've met a lot of folks that's this whole hamstring thing that, you know, it might not be that specific problem or that problem set that got them there, but nonetheless, they have this problem. They say, oh, you know, I just have, you know, this is my chronic problem. It's my curse. I'm a victim. It's probably in my DNA. And, you know, I'm like, not so much. I mean, sure, there's some genetic factors that can, control the integrity of connective tissue and some things like that. And certainly, you know, muscle mass and limb length and all that. But in reality, we got to get into that ownership thing. I got to own me. You got to own you. You know what I'm saying? And so it's like, hey, let's get past that type of thinking. And more, it's like, no, you know, these are things that are happening because of what I'm doing. And so I will sometimes, you know, sit a person down and say, look, you're going to repeat after me. If we're going to work together, here's what you're going to say. I am effed up, you know, and then of course, you know, they're kind of like a little bit reluctant. I'm effed up. Okay. And then now repeat after me. I am effed up because I am effing myself up. Own it.
Wow. Okay. That's definitely talk about an intervention.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have that because sure. It's, you know, delirious, you know, that thinking things are going to get better. You know, I mean, that's almost like, you know, going back to Van Halen and Roth. Little dreamer. And then, you know, other things too, you know, people, they do get confused and I want to help them. But I remember one time, this was a fire episode, as in I fired somebody. She'd come in and, you know, we went through this process and it's okay, now we're going to get started on the intervention. She's like, well, where's my ultrasound? I always get ultrasound for get my treatment. So, well, tell me more. So she'd been to a number of other places and hadn't gotten any better and wound up wanting to see me, wanting to fix all the problem. And so I did my little deal that I do, and we're going to get started. And she's like, I've got to have my ultrasound. And I said, well, how many ultrasound treatments have you had? She's like, I'm estimating my visits and appointments, 37. And so then I say, well, you've had 37 ultrasound appointments and you're no better. Why should we do 38, and go down, you know, in that direction as opposed to going in the right direction? I had to show her the door.
Well, it's logical. I'm sure that, you know, that, that level of clarity that you have as an outside perspective. So I mean, it's a difficult situation. I know what you're saying there. So what would you say to folks if they're at home and they're like, all right, maybe I'm experiencing something like this. Maybe it's time to take that close look in the mirror and look for things that I've ignored or I just don't want to face up. What would you say to them?
Yeah, or get some help from a professional. And, you know, if you've listened to 38 episodes of this show or, you know, whatever, you know that I'm, you know, fairly caring and considerate individual, and I'm not an insensitive bastard, but nonetheless, you know, there's come to Jesus has to happen. Hey guys, this is Coach Jay-Z chiming back in. And as you know, PK and I were recording this morning, actually in a blizzard. Now we weren't outside in the blizzard, but a blizzard was going on, and somewhere along the way in one of our ISPs, we lost our feed. And so I have lost mighty, mighty PK for this finale. And it's a bit of a disappointment because we had a great engagement or discussion on this final topic. And now my challenge is to bring it back to you in a way that is, you know, well-received and appropriate. And so we had been talking about the management methods or protocols that we use to deal with these movement dysfunctions and chronic injuries. And then, of course, I went off a bit telling a few stories, as I sometimes do. But now I'm back and, you know, trying to bring the point home. What I want to talk about is how I view this, these movement deficiencies, and they are indeed inefficiencies of movement. And in fact, when I first started to really become aware of how to classify this, I was looking at myself in the mirror, as well as on some videotape. And not only did I notice that my movements were inefficient in some cases, I felt that they were downright ugly. And so I want to get into what I call ugly movement syndrome and the ah factor. And before, you know, anyone gets insulted, you know, please know that that's my concern, that I don't want to be misinterpreted as I discuss this topic. And so I have an immediate disclaimer that, you know, I am certainly not being condescending or mean-spirited towards anyone who has congenital incapacities. We're really not discussing that in this missive. We're talking about all of us who are relatively able-bodied, who are simply not moving optimally because of a number of those factors like we'd previously identified. So that's where that comes from. So I was in the clinic working a few decades back, and you know, many times, you know, we're demonstrating exercises and movements. We have some mirrors for that, or sometimes we're using video. And you know, my colleagues and I, you know, everybody pitches in and takes turns doing these things. And so I had noticed when I saw myself moving in a few capacities, I thought, oh, that's actually ugly. It hurts me to see it, and in some ways, it actually either immediately or eventually hurts my body. And so I thought, well, I have an assignment to kind of fix those things, to try to be a better example and role model. And certainly that's an ongoing process, but that's certainly the one that I have embraced. And so fixing movement dysfunction is really the underlying message here. But I found that when I would speak to folks about inefficient movement patterns, it didn't have much registration. And so ultimately, I started to use the term ugly. And not, again, not referring to cosmetics or anything like that, but ugly movement leads me to generally want to make a sound when I see it, something like this. And that's typical of what an onlooker experiences when they see a person moving less than optimally, less than artistically, gracefully, poetically, beautifully. And that's really how we're designed as humans to move. Just unfortunately, some of those deficits that we talked about can change that up and alter it in a less than positive direction. So that's what I think about ugly movement. And where the ah factor comes in is we want to have, when we see ourselves in the mirror or on video or someone else observing our motion, we want them to be able to say, ah, or that's beautiful. And taking it a step further, if we can identify movement dysfunction and actually fix it, address it, and problem solve it before pain and breakdown ensues, that actually ensures us the highest potential for performance and for maintenance of training and that sort of thing, and the most orthopedic longevity. We're less likely to, outlive our joints, as many people in my world have said. A lot of times this requires seeing a professional to just get some help and some analysis. And so there's a pitch for working with your friendly local neighborhood, you know, whoever. And again, probably physical therapists would be at least one of the people on the list. So when we do this, when we maximize and respect our bodies and what they can do, and also maybe don't insult onlookers with movement that, does the wonderful human a little disservice, movement becomes and it's you who wins because you have a longer lasting, best performing body. So that's really the message that PK and I went over. I think we did it a bit better than I just did, but thank you for bearing with me in this circumstance. The review of the week, which came in from Apple Podcasts and much appreciated, was from DTP1980. And he had this to say about our show. Listening to these guys cover the topics of fitness and health, it's hard to think of a better duo to follow. They keep it interesting, fun, and engaging. It's hard not to get a positive buzz after one of their podcasts. Anyone who wants to get more out of their fitness or well-being should definitely check these guys out. And wow, wonderful words to say, DTP, and thank you so much. And actually, what happened during the show when PK was with me, I said, hey, we just got called a duo, dynamic duo. I've got dibs. I'm calling Batman. You are Robin. And he took it. So that's good to know. Just a few parting comments here. Always really appreciate your listening. I really would further appreciate you rating us, hopefully giving us a 5-star rating and a review and sharing with your friends and family the show. Also, if you have comments and questions, they're welcome anywhere. You can ping me at John@TheLifetimeBody or on Twitter or LinkedIn. And if you have injury experiences that you'd like to share or even ask for input or help and we can put them on the show, by all means, please do. So thanks again and have a great day.
Thank you for joining us on the Lifetime Body Podcast, where we kick ass for life through the attainment of ultimate wellness and the pursuit of peak performance and maximum longevity. If you are enjoying this content, please leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to the show and share it with your friends and family. Also, check out thelifetimebody.com, where you can access a variety of publications and media that can help you achieve the highest levels of health, fitness, success, and happiness. And be sure to subscribe to the weekly Kick-Ass for Life update, which keeps you real-time on the latest releases from TLB. Until next time, this is the Lifetime Body, where science meets common sense and where we help you kick-ass for life.